Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Sorry, this is going to be posted a little late. I should have posted yesterday, and I just didn't realize it. Very sorry. It shouldn't happen again, but yeah. So today we're talking about The Last Graduate, and I've been so excited for this book. Like, I've been waiting constantly for it. So for those of you who don't know, this is the second book in the Scholomance series by Naomi Novik, who is one of my favorite authors, like, of all time. I love her work. I love Rooted. I love the entire Temeraire series, even when the pacing got a little bad near the end, minus the whole amnesia thing in Japan. Long story. That's not important. Not important. She's a great writer. She's really good at personal character interactions. She's really cool with dark, subversive takes on fantasy tropes. And her first series was all about dragons. So, you know, she just had me from the very beginning. So her first book, Deadly Education, came out last year, I believe. And this year she released the sequel to it, Scholomance Book 2, The Last Graduate. For those of you who don't know what happened in the first book, I will give a brief summary. So if you don't want to be spoiled on that, please, you know, either listen to my previous review. You can get a good review there. There will be a link in the description in the show notes. And if not, if you don't, or if you're not up to that, you can just find a link to that book and this book in the show notes or description below. I have both a link on for Amazon and Barnes & Noble, as well as Audible. If you're looking for any of those sources to get the book, I highly recommend reading these. These are both very good books. You can also check out my review for that on Amazon and Goodreads. So, you know, I've got actually some other stuff going on now. It's fun. I actually really liked it. It was one of the first books in a while, so made me actually write a review for it. So, you know, not just ramble. Anyway, that's the intro out of the way. If you don't want to hear about stuff from Deadly Education, go ahead and go to that other review or go read the book first. You can go ahead and pause and just come back in a few hours. It's worth your time. Trust me. All right. Everybody here doesn't want to hear anything about Deadly Education? All right. So, A Deadly Education starts with the idea of the Scholomance. So, in this world, wizards are constantly hunted by Maleficaria, or monsters that hunt wizards down to eat their magic. Wizards are generally too powerful as adults, and kids don't have enough magic, so it's usually about high schoolers. Basically, everybody who's about high school age or a little bit younger gets attacked. So basically, between your middle and high school age, the attacks start mounting up. And even really powerful groups of enclaves, you know, wizards who built massive fortifications, still have problems with monsters killing their kids. On average, you have a 1 in 20 chance of survival. Not great. So, a long time ago, the wizard world got together and built a school, the Scholomance, with all these specialty wards and stuff like that. It greatly reduced the amount of Maleficaria that could come out the students inside. Only those handful of whoever barely slipped through the wards, or the handful of really rare, powerful Maleficaria that don't generally pose a threat to most of the time they're at school. And that upped the survival rate for those in the Scholomance to 1 in 4. The seats are all very coveted, and there's this whole subplot about, you know, different regions like the Shanghai Enclave, trying to impose that they're, you know, the Asian enclaves deserve more seats, because it's been high, because the Scholomance's construction was led by, you know, European and American enclaves. They've always contained a larger number of the seats than the others. Specifically, the New York enclave is considered to be like one of the powerful ones, constantly battling with Shanghai for, you know, control of it. Because control of the Scholomance, if more Chinese wizards are getting to the school, that means there's a greater survival rate among Chinese wizards to adulthood. That means that their enclaves have more people to work with. The magic system is all really interesting. I'll get into that more when I talk about the overall school. This series follows Galadriel Higgins, also known as Elle. She's great. Love her. She's basically, her mother is like one of those like spiritual healer kind of people, like always super nice, like genuinely nice, not the creepy cult leader kind. Like, she's just the best person ever. She talks about, she's like always helping out people. When people come to her for help, she always gives it free of charge. And she's the kind of person everyone just instinctively wants to help. There are even stories about when she needed a ride home for her and, when Gwyn needed a ride home from India after her husband's family kicked her out because of a prophecy about Galadriel becoming a dark wizard who will destroy all the enclaves. This random billionaire was just like, oh, you seem like a very nice person. I'm going to take you home by private jet. Like, that's the kind of person she is. She's just, like, this genuinely nice person. So, of course, Galadriel is basically a potential Voldemort. She's a really powerful wizard, a very powerful witch, who has the potential to become one of the most dangerous Maleficers. They basically, mages can cheat. Instead of gathering magic slowly over time, storing and building it up, they can cheat by draining it from other things. Now, most wizards do this in very small ways, everyone's small. But if you do it too much, you become a Maleficer. You can't really generate magic in other ways, and you become dependent on draining the old dry like a magical vampire. And she's so powerful that if she ever tried to do it, she'd end up draining, like, everything around her. So her mother taught her from a very young age to be pure mana. Only draw upon mana you naturally produce. You know, by doing exercise, stuff like that. Doing frustration, the more work you put into something, the more magic you can create through mana production. And the school is constantly trying to give her, like, the most dangerous and powerful spells ever. Like, the opening scene in the first book is, like, there's this monster got splattered all over her room. Because she got saved by Orion Lake, we will get to him. And she has to, like, the spells she gets are, like, you know, conjure walls of fire to burn her everything that's not supposed to be in her room to ash, that kind of stuff. She had this weird stuff with Orion Lake, and everything just kind of happened. She kept to herself because she was hoping to show off her power after gathering magic and staying alive through senior year and get a good alliance. Because half the seniors die when they try and make a break for the gates, because that's where all the Maleficari are. Anyway, the local hero of Ryan Lake, one of the Enclavers, who's constantly going around saving everyone, saves her life, it gets attention spawned on her, they have this whole thing where they have to go down and repair the school's mechanisms that are supposed to clean out the graduation room that broke a long time ago, so the seniors can make a break for it, and they won't try and open the doors early and let all the males out to destroy everyone else in the school so they can make a clean break. So, yeah. At the end of the first book, they repaired the walls of immortal flames, and then the new freshmen come, and you know the whole school gets cleared out of Malice for like the first time in centuries. And then all the new freshmen come in after Orion Lake and Galadriel make it to their rooms in time to avoid being, you know, burned alive. And Galadriel is actually given a message from her mother, which is a surprise because you know they're not. Gladriel's mother, Gwen, is, like, liked by a lot of people, but she doesn't want to be a part of any of the Enclaves, even though she's, like, a world-renowned healer. And so they don't really have a lot of money. Gladriel got in mostly out of goodwill and luck. And because, you know, again, everyone likes Gwen Higgins. And most people don't even know that she's Gwen Higgins' daughter. So what happened was, she gave him a small note on some enchanted onion, because, again, there's a weight allotment, and asking and giving anything is already a big risk because that's basically your currency. It's a very barter trade, survival of the fittest kind of environment in the school. Everyone's trying to survive. What do you have to trade? And it's really cool. I really like the magic system, and the hard choices the Scholomance forces the people in it to make are really cool. I've always loved them. It gives a real, like, danger around every corner vibe, even when monsters aren't constantly attacking. But her message says, stay away from Orion Lake. And Gwen apparently loves everyone, so Galadriel's a little weirded out by this, but she and Orion are already friends at this point. She kind of likes him. Okay, talking about Orion, because again, I'm setting up for talking about the Scholomance book too, because I think you really do need to know the first one. Galadriel and Orion have this really interesting relationship, because she's, like, the future dark, you know, dark sorceress in training, or in preparation, basically. She's almost like a bomb everyone's waiting to go off, and everyone always has these really horrible feelings about her and treat her like she's, you know, basically everyone's expecting her any day now to reveal she's become like a magic vampire and she's going to take over the world. Like, everyone has that feeling. A friend described it as, every time you show up, even like a friend of hers that she asked why people act like that, because she didn't. She always tried to judge people not on, you know, gut feelings, stuff like that, but on how their actions actually appeared. And she said, it's kind of like you're a rain cloud that's about to rain on all our days. It's not raining yet, but the second we start doing something, you're going to start pouring. So, you know, everyone wants to stay away from her. But Orion kind of has, and so everyone looks at her like a monster in waiting, but everyone looks at Orion the opposite way. Nobody treats him like a normal person. He can kill Mao's really effectively because he has a special ability to drain Mao's of their magic when he kills them. So he's basically a Mao-killing machine because he can blast them with Firebolt, get the magic back to do another over and over and over again. And even at a young age, he was like just asking to go out and help her for one. But as a downside, even the people who don't think he's a little weird for that, treat him like a hero, you know? Everybody treats him like, oh, Orion, you're the best. And he doesn't really know how to react to it because he doesn't think he's that amazing. It's just something he enjoys doing. And he feels like no one actually wants to be around him. He's the weird kid, but he's the weird kid who's super useful, you know? He keeps them alive. And even the other Enclavers, apparently it's found out in the first book that he's been feeding magic into their reserves, and they've been putting in nothing. Literally nothing. They have been leeching off his magic and the magic he absorbs from Mao's the entire time at school. And this is a system that's usually like all the Enclavers put magic in together along with some of their friends, and they have this big pool to draw on, which helps them stay alive. It's one of the reasons they have a higher survival rate than the independent wizards they bring in to act essentially as bait. But it's a better chance of survival, so a lot of people take it. And he just is unable to get pissed about it, because to him it's normal. Like, people have always just kind of been using him, thinking he's a little weird. And even the people that really like him in a sort of distant hero way. And Galadriel was the first person who came up and was like, you idiot! I was trying to do something, you saved my life, but I was going to kill the thing, I was going to unravel it and get some nice resource materials out of it. And now it's blown all over my room! He mistakes her for a potential Maleficer at first, because a friend whose room near her went missing, and she eventually told him that she knew who the person was, after he tried to kill her, and Orion saved her again. And she gets kind of mad about it, because she's kind of, like, always almost about to do something about it, even though she doesn't want to, and she gets mad when Orion bursts in like she's a damsel in distress, because she could kill all of them, literally everyone in the school, if she actually put her mind to it. But she doesn't want to, and she's kind of grateful for Orion for not making her have to go that far. Except for the first part with her room. She's really pissed about that. But she likes how Orion, after he realizes, oh, you're not a Maleficer? Okay, don't have anything to worry about. Cool. See you around, Elle. And he's like, he treats her like a normal person because she treats him like a normal person. It's weird because their relationships with everyone else are so dysfunctional, but they act normal to each other. So they're the only normal friend they each of them possess at first. And even as Elle gets other friends, she maintains that friendship with Orion, which I've always loved. And the relationship does eventually bloom into some more romance stuff. You're into shipping. They're cute together. I like it. Especially with how oblivious Orion is. Anyway, second book starts. Okay, we're going to talk about the second book. I'm like, God, I'm almost 13 minutes in. I'm only just starting to talk about the plot of the second book. Good thing I have extra time now because I extended my bus route plan. Yay! More of this. Okay, now that we have a basic understanding. So, after the second book, they're in the senior year, they're preparing for their big run on graduation, and now Elle has been revealed to be to be Gwyn Higgins' son. So, you know, she went from being the nobody in the back room who's not trying to hide her power and wasn't really sure, and eventually decided she didn't even want to join an enclave, what she had thought she wanted her whole life, which I actually like that twist. She grew up angry with her mom for never joining an enclave, but after realizing what the enclavers do to maintain that safety, that power, she realizes she doesn't want it. In fact, she even turns, like, because enclavers live in this massive fortified palace, rarely see even Mao's, and have lots of guards. She lived in a small coven, and when she was screaming for help because everybody disliked her so much, no one would come. When she was a little girl, she barely fended off a Mao by melting it, even though it was made of metal and shouldn't have melted. And she barely managed to do that while her mom was in the hospital. And everybody heard her screaming, just nobody came. And she was angry with her mom. She's like, if you would just go to an enclave, we could be safe. But when she got there, she realized, wait, I'm like a miniature nuke. They would have made me like Orion. I would have been used as a weapon. And her mom didn't want to see her little girl used as a weapon. She didn't want to make trade off other people's lives for hers. Not in the way the Enclavers do, where it's so blatantly obvious. Using them as meat shields, making sure they never have to do any of the dangerous chores because they'll outsource them to the kids that hope if they're nice enough to an Enclaver kid, they'll get a maybe possible spot in the future. Or at least a good word in so they can earn a spot in an Enclave. And eventually, she determined that she doesn't even want to be in an enclave. That she's going to go around and use this new spell book she got after having to defeat one of the most horrifying and traumatic monsters of all time. Seriously, the, what are they called again? Looking up. Mawmouths. And they're basically these monsters that devour things. They can't be killed by almost... You have to basically just rapid-fire killing spells while it's eating you in order to kill it. And if it grabs you, you can't get out of its grip unless you kill it, and you don't die. No, you get added to its mass, still alive, screaming in eternal agony. And she killed one in the first book, and it, like, hardcore traumatized her, which I like. She doesn't just, like, walk away from it and have a nightmare on occasion. No, she, like, actually has PTSD from it and suffers throughout the entire time. She even mentions offhandedly that maybe she, maybe after she's out of here, she'll meet up with the other Shanghai wizard, who's, like, the only other wizard who's ever killed a Mawmouth, and talk to him so they can, you know, share their experiences and hopefully get through it. Or maybe they'll just start screaming together. She genuinely doesn't know. And I like that. Not necessarily the trauma that happened to her, but the fact she doesn't get over it. It's not something she really gets over, even at the end of the book where she has to face one again. Spoiler alert. But, yeah. This one is a lot more focused on the school, the mechanics of it, and also Elle figuring out what she's going to do with her life now. Like, she figured out she didn't want to be a part of an enclave. She got a book that will give her a lot of leverage when she gets out. But she likes Orion. She, at first, is a friend, and later is more. And people are constantly asking, it's like, what are you going to do? Like, Orion's a really big part of the New York Enclave. We can't just let you walk away with him. And she gets a little indignant like that. Like, you know, Orion's, like, their tool. Which, they kind of see her like that. Even Chloe, one of the nicer Enclave kids, is a little bit like, I mean, I don't want to, but there are a lot of adult wizards that are Enclave that will get really mad at me if I let you get away with Orion. Like, she starts full-out conflicts based on her allegiances. Because, again, she's a potential walking nuke. Yeah, she can't really use Malia, which means small spells come hard to her. But if New York got a hold of her, it would tip the power balance. They already have Orion, a Mal Slayer for the ages. And now they have a wizard who can literally summon super volcanoes. Like, her powers are continental scale with enough magic, and enclaves are designed to hoard magic so they can do all those massive projects. She would basically be the perfect weapon for wherever Enclave gets her. She's not to mention that apparently one of the things we learned really early on in the book, this is a minor spoiler, but you figure out pretty early on, one of the Asian Enclaves was completely destroyed and only a single survivor got into the school. She had been out of the Enclave when it happened, came back and was destroyed. Her grandmother found her after she came back when she was away on business. And they're like the only two survivors. Nobody knows how it was destroyed, except for those outside Scholomance. But again, the Scholomance is a closed bubble except for freshmen. And all they know is that there was only one survivor of this really powerful Asian enclave, second only to Shanghai. And everyone's thinking, holy shit, are we about to have an enclave war again? And if there was an enclave war, it would probably be against Shanghai and New York. Asia versus the American, European, East versus West, that kind of thing. So everyone has this undercurrent of, you know, are our parents fighting to the death outside this school? And that uncertainty, combined with Elle's sudden appearance as not only a daughter of a very powerful healer who's world-renowned, but a powerful daughter of a healer who's also potentially one of the most powerful destructive mages ever born, although they have mentioned that they're, you know, more of once-in-a-generation talents, like there have been other mages on her level. But again, they're really rare and really dangerous, and if there's a war going on, if she survives, she has really strong, she appears to have very strong ties with New York Enclave, and people genuinely don't believe, for good reason, because most kids only just basically dream of getting into an enclave, even enclavers dream of only just holding onto that spot at all costs, that she's not gonna, you know, go work for them, you know, the potential enemy, and I really like the conflict that imposes. It's not, like, irrational. Like, the logic behind it is sound. The fact that a lot of the Chinese-speaking kids, because there's a big language barrier, because the two main languages in the Scholomance are either English or Chinese for the classes, they don't spend a lot of time with her because she's not as fluent in that language. And as a result, they think that the New York Enclave found out about her early on, has been hiding her as a potential weapon because they were informed about this war way before they got in here and were told to gather any resources they could. And when you say it like that, it sounds a little conspiratorial, but an entire enclave was just destroyed. The kind of thing that usually only happens when Maw Mouse take up residence and thinks this kid, we know at the very least, it wasn't a Maw Mouse. So yeah, it's all very, you know, natural born suspicion, born out of completely logical and understandable motivations. Which is one of the reasons I really like Naomi Novik. She's so good at those subtle character interactions and conflicts that even back in the Temeraire series, there was a lot of stuff like that with the personal responsibility Lawrence felt towards Temeraire, Temeraire's personal responsibility towards Lawrence, and how Lawrence's allegiance with England often conflicted with both of their desires in that direction. This also happens in Uprooted. And all in all, Naomi Novik is amazing at writing. I need to say this up front. She's probably the best at it. The best I've personally read, anyway. I really like her style. I like Elle as a character. She came across as a little whiny in Deadly Education, but she comes off... I think Naomi, whatever was going on there, she fixed completely here, because I didn't feel any of that in this book. Because she has friends now. She's, you know, teamed up with two other sorceresses in training, one of whom's like a familiar breeder who's sacrificing mice as sort of a malificer track, basically where you do just enough malia to get through and then you wean off and when you get out. And she was going to use that power to protect her children. But after Elle cast this kind of spiritual cleanse to help steady herself after the Maw Mouth, she kind of broke down and was like, I'm not doing that, even if it needs to survive. So she built familiars and got into alliance. She's also with another alchemy track student, not alchemy track, artifice track student. What was her name? Lou and Adhaya. But they're like a fun pair. They seem to have a genuine friendship. Adhaya was one of the only people who treated Galadriel like she was an actual person, even before everything got revealed, and they had this alliance even before all these revelations back in book one. They even eventually add Chloe to their team. She's an enclaver from New York who isn't as dickish as a lot of the other enclavers. She's nice, and once she realizes what she's been doing to Ryan, she feels genuinely bad for it. It's very clear her family's newer to all this, and that her grandmother has tried to teach her to be a bit of a more of a decent human being than people like Magnus. And, yeah. Of course, this year things get harder. The school is playing tricks, ever since she killed a Maw Mouth that was going to kill a bunch of students and grabbed a magic book that the school was trying to use as bait to lead her away because it realized she was the only person that could kill it. After she got the book and killed the Maw Mouth, the school had it out for her. And this year it really ramps it up. Elle is forced to make some hard choices and eventually makes a shocking discovery. And a discovery that forces her to choose between a selfish but safe choice and a dangerous but morally right choice that she decides to make for the benefit of future generations, which is really touching. I really like the moral dilemmas it forces on the senior class. Won't get into that yet. That'll be for spoilers later on. The writing is still very much focused on Elle's internal monologue, adds in a lot of background details. If you don't like that kind of stuff, it might be a little weird, but all in all, I think it's worth it for the ride, and I really like the world they Naomi Novik built, so I'm willing to put up it personally. It's not that big a deal to me. Aside from that, the only other downside I would have to say is, oh my god, it's Naomi Novik, can you stop writing cliffhangers? I can't take it anymore. Like, it's gotten bad. Like, I remember reading the Temeraire series, and every time, luckily I read it after the book series was finished. I started Temeraire after that series was finished, or at least when it was, like, almost finished, I think. And so as I was reading the series, I could immediately jump to the next book after each cliffhanger. But as Naomi Novik has continued writing, whenever she writes a series, just the longer she goes on, the more cliffhanger-ish every single book has to be. And this book ends on what might be the single most amazingly hateable cliffhanger of all time. Not because I dislike it as a story beat. I actually think it's a really ingenious story beat that's going to make things really interesting for book three in a way I didn't think so. I'll explain more about this later. It's a very good hook for the third book. I want to make that very clear. I'm not hating on it because it's bad or poorly written. It's very well written, in keeping with other characters, and I actually didn't see it coming until the last second right before it happened. I was like, oh no, Orion. Don't. And then I realized what was going to happen. And it was that same moment as Elle realized what he was going to do, but couldn't do anything until... no, I'm getting into spoilers. Don't do that, Davis. Come on. focus. No, it's really well written. I loved it. But now I have to wait a whole year for the third book. Naomi Novik, why do you do this to me? I need that third book, like, now. Like, oh, so good. Anyway, that's about it. I give this a 9 out of 10, maybe a 9.5 out of 10 if I'm being really good. It's not perfect. There are some minor pacing problems. Naomi Novik has never completely nailed down pacing, but pacing is really subjective, so it's very personal for me. I could see people rating this as a 10 out of 10, honestly. It's one of the best subversions of the magical school genre I've ever heard of, and it's one of the best dark fantasy books I've read, up there with her other book, Uprooted, because she's really good at this whole dark fantasy thing. So, yeah, definitely recommend. All right, now we're getting into spoilers. This is a long one, guys, so buckle in. We're 25 minutes in, not telling you to buckle in. I would be a horrible bus driver. Anyway, where to begin here? Okay, so, as the school year starts, Elle is constantly getting, you know, screwed around to school. She gets horrible classrooms, is sent for a private study room for a really hard seminar class because she has no choices in her classrooms, because you're supposed to be able to, like, mark down other classes you'd like to take instead of some of the others, so the school has to force work in. But she was sent to a room with only freshmen that also gets regularly attacked by monsters, and so she didn't know what any of the other classes were, so she could switch her schedule, so she had to take what the school gave her. She was constantly attacked by monsters because she wasn't willing to let the freshmen die. Luckily, the New York Enclave was sharing their power with her later on to help, you know, keep kids alive, because Orion and Clovey are both on her side. There's some minor conflict with that, but when they realize that, you know, she's letting Orion, you know, she's helping out Orion, because Orion, well, she basically accused the users that Orion isn't going around hunting monsters anymore. But thanks to the Walls of Mortal Flame that cleaned out the graduation hall, most of the monsters are dead, and while the small, they're only really small fries. Actually, despite the monsters being more prevalent in this one, I'd argue, they kind of fade into the background, which is kind of the point. See, the thing is, they've kind of been thinned out. Orion is used to having, like, all this magic in the Scholomance. It's like a party for him, because he can save everyone. And he gets so much magic from killing all these mouths. But he's basically been on, like, water rations, essentially, while here. Like, he's been dying of magical thirst, because he's been, these last 3 years, he's basically been just gorging himself on magic, even with what he puts into the New York Enclave's pot. Like, you can really tell why the New York Enclave haven't been making magic or building it up themselves, even though, as, you know, Elle might have, I think Elle pointed this out at one point, that if they had been building up magic all together and shared it, the entire school would have had all the magic they needed. If everyone had been building magic and Orion had been draining for the mouths, the entire school could have had all the magic they needed. But, you know, they didn't feel the need to, because Orion was making more than enough magic for all of them combined. But now with no monsters and all the ones that are there and elves, Orion's getting a little desperate. I actually do like the way they evolve her relationship with him. It starts out with him just getting exasperated how dense he is, but now he's like running all over the place, missing meals, falling behind on work, and I was like, Orion, I get it, you want to be the hero, but you need to get your schoolwork done so your schoolwork doesn't come alive and kill you, because this is a Scholomance. You need to go get some sleep, go get some food. On your off days, you can go hunting. And they start, like, bickering like an old married couple, talking about how many times they've saved each other and, you know, having these little conversations where Orion's like, Elle, just come on and have some fun with us. And Elle's like, all right, fine, but you have to get some, like, sleep and properly rest after this. Oh, and you are finishing that homework if I have to sit in your room and make you do it. Their relationship actually gets really cute. I like it. They're very adorable together. And I'm a hard person to please with pairings. I will freely admit that. I'm not exactly a romantic person, all in all, and I find it, like, I only think, like, top-tier pairings, you know? I'm a bit of a connoisseur. No, I'm not a connoisseur at all. That's a complete lie. I just generally don't identify with the constant shovel protagonist with another person of the opposite gender and hope for love. I hated the romance. I remember talking about, like, being a lot more ambivalent toward the romance in Shadow and Bone, but thinking about that series, like, what was it, Mal and Alina? I hated that relationship. Like, it was just, he was just, like, the most whiny, little, annoying twat, and I did not know why Alina cared about him. And I feel that way about a lot of relationships, either indifferent, or I just feel one of the people in the pairing are just annoying. But I really liked the relationship here because it was built up naturally from a friendship that turned into something more as they realized they were like the only people in their lives they could say genuinely cared about them as a person and not, you know, what they could or would eventually do. Orion, because everyone defined him as his, you know, hero role. And Elle, because her, you know, grandmother took one look at her, saw a vision that she was going to bring death to all the enclaves, and her family, who are considered, like, so pacifist, they're all, like, pure mana. Her mom is so excited to go live with her. And they won't even, like, dry up wood to draw magic from other living things. They were thinking about killing her because of the vision. You know, her mom took her away, obviously, but that moment just defined her life. You know, everyone reacted like her grandmother with horror. And then Orion's like, oh, you're not a Malphite, sir? You're just that guy? Okay, sorry to have judged you so harshly. Because he knows what it's like to be judged, you know, based on a single aspect of you. And all in all, it just grew pretty naturally for me. I like it, okay? Like I was gonna say, I just like it. Anyway, so, after that, as things get more and more, though, eventually the gym opens up. They have this really heartbreaking moment where they have these exercises in the gym, in these exercise room, and eventually she goes there with Chloe and a few others. At this point, the paranoia is starting to rack up with the Shanghai kids, thinking she's like some kind of secret weapon. And someone tries to open up the floor under her and drop her into the void, and she reaches down into the... She realizes she can't stop them, but she instead reaches into the magic that makes up the gym. It was supposed to be like this big old paradise, you know, this fake reality of a park to give the kids something to remind them of the outside world and what's waiting for them on the other side. You know, a place of peace and sanctuary. And now it's all this, you know, dried up, cracked ruin that's kind of bleak and empty. The few trees are dried up husks. The sky is white. You know, because the whole school is damaged and ancient at this point from constant wear and tear and Maleficaria attacks. But Elle manages to she basically tries to force the ground to work normally, and she ends up forcing a sort of auto-repair sequence on the entire gym, and it turns into this beautiful park and forest that practically feels like it's the real world. And everyone aside from the freshmen breaks down crying, because all of them realize they're going to have to fight through one of the worst... Because all of them realize they're going to have to fight through a horde of Maleficaria that the school's been building up in the basement to get to this. And that most of them aren't going to make that. None of them have a sure shot to get out of here. Not even the Enclave kids. Because they've been trapped in this dark, damp, empty, husk of a world. That's not even the real world. It's floating in some kind of empty void. And they don't know if they'll ever get out. That any one of them could die at any moment. Even the really safe ones. And they might never see us again. And all the freshmen start talking about how pretty it is. And the rest of them run crying from the room. And of all the things Elle's done, summoning conjuring walls of flames, helping to power shields that deflected the entire graduation hall to repair the school, and fighting alongside Orion, all of that is nothing compared to the emotional trauma she put everyone through. Like, everyone is terrified of her for that. Not for the whole, I could kill you all with a flick of my wrist if I had enough magic, and could definitely do it even without that magic if I drained it from you. No, the fact that she did, you know, force them to see what they might never have again in, like, the cruelest way possible. Even she breaks down here. She's horrified by what she did. And it was one of those moments where I'm like, I'm almost on the side of the freshmen, but the more I think about it, the more horrifying it is. Especially for, like, the non-seniors who still have, like, you know, multiple years of this, where the equipment that's running downstairs right now that's giving the seniors a free run this year, making it really likely they're all going to survive, might break. And they might not have that free run. They're probably not going to get to see this. Most of them will die. And they just get wrecked. Anyway, as the obstacle course starts up to help train, the school puts it up halfway through the year after finals. And also, Orion almost dies due to not finishing his classwork. Because in the Scholomance, if you get bad grades, your bad grades come to try and eat you. He almost gets melted by a potion because he failed his alchemy exam. Now has to, like, force him to study and do all his makeup work before he dies. So yeah, that was fun. I really liked it. It was all really cute. Loved it. Like, you feel Galadriel's just exasperation. It's like, Orion, I get it. You want to hunt monsters, but if you don't do your homework, you will literally melt into a puddle, and then you won't be able to hunt any monsters. So do your homework. I'm sorry. I just really like the pair of them. Whenever they're like bantering together, it's just so much fun. So yeah. Anyway, so, you know, the obstacle course gets really horrifying. Like, it slowly adds more and more monsters, and by, like, the first few weeks, literally no team or alliance can get through the obstacle course during their allotted time without either Orion or Galadriel on their side, because it always summons these massive conjurations. Also, fun fact, I actually really like what Naomi did to... Because one of the things that really confused me is like, okay, so you have an obstacle course to practice all the magic runs, but how do you make it so you're... Because I thought the whole gimmick was they had to build up all this magic so they had even a chance. What about their weapons? Won't they degrade and stuff like that? That's the cool thing. Apparently the gym has this section the obstacle course is in, which is this huge elaborate illusion that simulates everything they would do. But, fun fact, it only does it by using about 1%, half of a percent of the magic they would use it, allowing them to run it like 100 times without, you know, using up all their magic. So they're able to cast really massive spells, and then they can just build that magic back up. It's literally less than they would normally build up on their own. Even all of Elves' spells don't use that much. So it allows, and their weapons and everything are all simulated. The only thing that are real is the damage to their bodies, which means they still have to be careful because a severe injury can basically be fatal in the Scholomance, because you will be on your own at least sometime in your room, and things can get in your room. Although, this year it's less of a problem, because obviously L is, you know. And eventually L, realizing that they're only going to be able to get through, if this is, the school's simulating the obstacle course based on what apparently it's seeing in the graduation hall. So L starts rallying the other students to, along with the New York Enclave and a few others who realize the situation they're in, to get together and group up, because the only way we're making through is if everyone works together. This is not a, we can all just get in a small little group and rush it. We're all going to make it, or almost none of us are going to make it. So she starts willingly going on extra runs with other people, so long as those people provide healing and magic to those who need it afterwards. She and Orion will provide them with heavy hitters to get through. Orion's tempted by the fact that a few normal mouths get into the, usually it's like one or two mouths the school lures into the obstacle course to make it more real. So, you know, it's all very, we need to start working together. And the Shanghai kids obviously don't want to get into it with her. They think that she's, you know, gathering the other enclaves in an alliance against them. As I said, from their perspective, it looks like, you know, New York's biggest independent gym they found is rallying all the other independents on the side of the English and the English-speaking part of their community. So a lot of the Chinese students rally around Shanghai and just refuse to go with her. They gather in the alchemy and artifice labs, working on their own project. But everyone else starts joining out. Then she has one massive... then eventually, though, she has a confrontation with them. The Shanghai kids have decided that they're going to take her out. They only need Orion. Orion has proven pretty good for getting past, and if they gather their forces alongside the others, maybe the Scholomance is doing all this because of something she did. They're not really clear. At the very minimum, they seem to think that they need to take her out for the safety of their family. You know, a few of them even realize she's going to kill at least one of us, probably multiple of us, and a group of them all get together to kill her. And they ambush her and Orion. More in a, if you are this powerful, if you get out there and you ally with New York and we are in a war, which it seems very likely that all that's going to happen from their perspective, we are all going to die even if we make it out of here. Our friends, our families, everyone. So we have to take you out now. You know, a very desperation play kind of thing. And Elle has this moment of, like, after they get attacked, Elle puts up a shield and manages to protect them. But apparently, all the other people who now depend on her to survive what is probably going to be the most hard, like, the harshest senior graduation ever, it looks like, judging from the officer, of course, everyone else in the school comes to help her out because they realize her and Orion are their only tickets to survival. So everyone else is allied against the Shanghai school. and they're about to go to all-out war. Like, the war that might not even be happening outside these this school might start here. And Ella points that out. Like, in her mind, when she's going over her monologue, she's like, we don't even know there's a war. We might start the war. And so she decides to finally cut loose. She starts with a spell she accidentally, the only spell she ever accidentally created, because when you create spells, you kind of draw upon your affinity for magic. She created a super volcano spell, and she starts it, and the entire room shifts. Every other spell trying to grab for the ground just falls away. You get this power of everyone looking at her with utter terror. She pulls on the New York, the massive school reserve they've all built up together. And she doesn't, like, form the volcano, but she grabs the earth in preparation for it. And everyone just loses their shit. Like, every single one of them is just looking at her like, holy shit, she could kill every single one of us and still have magic to spare. And they're like, Elle, why don't we just calm down a bit? And she releases the spell, and she's like, look, you idiots, the only way we are getting out of here is if we work together. And, you know, she manages to abuse the situation. The Shanghai kids still aren't on board. Not yet. They send a few of their lower-ranked members and a few of their hangers-on to go test out her word. But as it becomes clear that she's really just trying to get everyone out of here. And I really like how that's transitioned. She's transitioned from just trying to stay alive to being so fed up with the system she's in. The school where only one in four kids gets out alive. The enclavers who use the independent kids they've let in with such grace. We're so grateful. They should be so grateful for all the kindness, for the joy we let them in. To, and with the undertone of, to be our meat shields. That she's decided she's going to get everyone out of here. And when she and Orion get out of this place, she's going to use that book, the book she fought on Mawmouth to get, to go around and build smaller enclave-like structures for independent mages so that everyone can have the same levels of protection. That she's going to get her whole class out. Her and Orion will defeat anything in their way. And at first you think, okay, so this is where we're going. We're going to have this giant battle in the basement. No, that's the twist. The twist is the Scholomance doesn't hate her. It actually shows her something. She's getting really stressed about all this planning. And the Scholomance gets like a semi-sentient spell, lures her up to her room. The homeroom she was in with a bunch of freshmen where she's constantly getting attacked. And opens a panel and leads her down. And, you know, she clearly gets to the Scholomance's leading her somewhere. And since it's led her to a lot of monsters in the past, she's like, all right, I'll take it out. If the Scholomance is leading me places, I'm just sick of this. I will kill whatever it's after me. But it leads her to the graduation hall. And when she opens the panel, where once stood an army of monsters, there's nothing. She walks calmly through the whole room and touches the doors that would lead to safety. She doesn't open them for a few different reasons, but she realizes there's nothing to fight. There's nothing. And then she realizes the school, at its core, is bound to protect the brilliant, special children of this world. All the wizard children. It's designed, at its core, to protect them best it can. And for years, the best it could do was 1 in 4. But now, for the first time since its creation, the school has no monsters. The machinery to destroy them is working, at least for the time being. And for the first time forever, someone inside the school has a chance to set up a system less dangerous, to make it better. It's been training her this whole time, sending all the monsters that would attack other less powerful kids that wouldn't usually go after her straight to her because it knew that she could deal with it. It forced her to make the choice between the Mawmouth and the book, because it wanted to know if she was capable of repairing the machinery. Because it realized, with both her and Orion, this configuration of students, after all these centuries, it had a chance. A singular chance to do better. Because its sole purpose is to protect as many children as possible. And it was really, it was this very touching moment, honestly. Where this school that had been categorized as like the lesser evil is really shown to be just trying to do its best. It's the lesser good, honestly. It's soul-minded towards that purpose. Its purpose is to protect as many children as possible, even if that means some other children die in the process. But for a long time, I mean, if 1 in 20 chance of death, that means it's saving 5 times as many children that would... That means it's saving 4 children for every one child that would usually live outside of it. which is pretty good, honestly. So, yeah. She goes up and tells them. And there's this moment where she realizes, if we work together, we might be able to find a way to make the school safe. But if the others decide that they don't want to help, this alliance that we built out of fear of what the school is about to throw at us crumbles, and they hear there's nothing down there, then it's all for nothing. This once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. But she goes. She doesn't lie. She isn't trying to see. She just calmly walks up there, and they're having a meeting and wondering where she was, and she's like, you don't need to worry. It's all gone. It's empty. There's something waiting to kill us down there. She explains the school letter there, that it wants to protect them. And the others don't believe it until the school literally kills the lights and lights up the words engraved on the table there, actually, you know, based around the library. Because all the tables there are the same phrases. There's this phrase about how everything is to protect the children. And it's really sweet, honestly. So, yeah, I really like that. I think it's really, really cool. And, yeah. In Wisdom, Shelter. God, that moment of Elle's just calmly climbing back up the ladder as she realizes that there's nothing down there waiting to tear them limb from limb was an amazing moment. Truly, one of Naomi Novik's better moments, my personal opinion. I like that. I really do like that. And yeah, that's how it was. Anyway, the whole thing was very touching, and in the end, they decide to do what's best. They all gather together and start brainstorming any solution they can. At all. Any solution. There has to be a way they can make it safe. They think about trying to keep putting methods of repairing everything. But they have people who are the children of people in enclaves who literally did this for a living. Because enclavers have gone in to fix the school's equipment before, but they've lost so many people they've just declared unfeasible. They couldn't protect it. They literally have one guy who's the daughter, who's like, was the son of this, like, really impressive Shanghai mage who's been trying to figure out a way to do it forever so Shanghai can make their own Scalamance. And he's just like, nope, tried it, nope, tried it, nope, tried it, nope, that's really dumb, and if it would have worked, we would have tried it, and no, do you want to just create Maleficaria? These magically bred creatures are going to turn into magic-hungry monsters and eat people, like they always do, because that's how Maleficaria are created, idiot, bonk. It's just like, I love that. I love that brainstorming session. It was like this nice, like, lighthearted moment, kind of. Like, tense, because, you know, they have this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity they can't squander. In the end, though, they think of a really ingenious solution that I never would have thought of, actually. See, the school is disconnected from the world and acts as a prison for the kids. Well, they realized, wait, the school, we've all thought of this place as, like, a prison, right? Well, they have this honeypot spell that draws mouths to it. We use it to lure people away from construction projects. What if we made one in here, and then we slowed the graduation? The school's barriers weaken the most when somebody leaves or enters it, which is why when all the school students are pulled in and the graduation is only like 30 minutes to reduce the amount of mouths they come through. But if we drag the graduation out and we have somebody entering leaving every second for almost the entire 30-minute period, and we draw as many mouths in the school as possible using a honeypot spell to keep them away from the students and draw them deep into the school. And we get everyone out, not just the seniors, but the sophomores, the freshmen, the juniors, bring everyone out. And then, at the last moment, before she reaches the gate, Elle and Orion will throw the school into the void with all the Maleficaria. And the calculations they do based on the amount of time and the mouths that come in and the fact that they come from all over the world suggest they might be able to reduce the Maleficaria so much that the survival rate in the outside world would increase to 1 in 2, which is 2 times that of even the Scalamance for everyone, not just people that get to go in there. And since most of the Maleficaria were created a long time ago and a lot of the practices that create them are now considered dangerous and stupid, there would be less of them, and they'd be able to be in a more controlled population that the wizards would be able to work with. Plus, if they get too high again, they can just do this again one day with adult wizards who know what they're doing. So they're going to, and the school helps them because it doesn't care about if they survive here. It literally just cares, how can I maximize survival for the wizard children of the world? And they do it. they create this massive ritual, all of their strengths, the weaker students going through the barrier, going through the doors first. What, wave by wave, the Malfoy charge in. There's even a mall mount that Elle has to kill, and she has to, like, this big trauma moment, but she sees someone else about to get eaten, and she forced the way through. It's not the whole, I get over my trauma thing. No, she's screaming on the inside, but she's like, I have to keep throwing spells. Keep throwing the killing spell. Killing spell. Killing spell. Killing spell. And she saves the student. All the students look at her like crazy. Actually, all the other students eventually even realize before this that she killed a mall mount, which one of her friends, Adium, had suspected. When she confirms it, everybody's like, holy shit. Which, because it's really impressive, apparently only one other living wizard ever did, and it cost him, like, 10 other people who were also doing it with him. So, yeah. Anyway, but as Elle's about to launch the spell, Orion and them get overwhelmed by the monsters. The honey pot spell is falling apart as they leave, and Orion realizes they're not both going to... Orion is caught between the monsters and Elle, and Elle's trying to drag him toward the entrance, and... he throws her to safety as it's thrown into the void. And that's how the book ends. No, there's no prologue. It's literally Orion has a choice between him and Elle, maybe making an Elle, definitely making him holding him off. And Orion Blake decides to hold off the monsters and throw Elle through the gate as the school is flung into the void. Lost. And it is tragic. I'm going to be honest about that. That moment... when, like, because there's this big moment as Elle, like, realizes, as, you know, you realize as Elle realizes what Orion will do in this situation, and you just feel like shit. Like, you know, no, but she's already falling to the gate at that point. And literally the book ends as she goes through it. You don't even see the other side. Naomi Novik, if you're gonna make cliffhangers like this, you need to make more than one book per year. I'm sorry, I know 1 year for a book is already ridiculously fast. I apologize. But seriously, I need to know what happened after this. I need to know so bad. What happened? How are they gonna find Orion again? What's the deal with the maybe Enclave War? How mad are all the adults gonna be if this children destroy the greatest magical construction ever made? What about Gwyn Higgins? What was the deal with Orion maybe smelling a bit like a Mal? Like he's keeping one for a pet. Just so many things. So many things. And I can't wait. Wow, this review went long. I've been bulging up a bit of extra time, though, for my bus route plan, so I'll be fine here. But yeah, this is probably my longest review for a single work, but I just had a lot to talk about, and guys, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm planning on still doing a bit of a ranking system. I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to do. I know I'm going to try and have a bit of everything. You know, at least one movie, at least one game, at least one book, and at least one show in there when I do my end of year rankings. And for that, I'm thinking about just doing everything I reviewed this year, not necessarily, and, you know, all things I reviewed this year, and then my tops for, you know, what came out this year. And, yeah. Yeah, I'm, this is definitely, this is nearly, definitely going to be my book of the year. The only other competition it would have had if it had come out this year was the Six of Crows trilogy. I mean, Six of Crows theology is the only books I've read this year that are anywhere near as good. But they didn't come out this year, so, this is definitely going to be up there. So, yeah, I hope you guys like this. I definitely really enjoyed this book. I highly recommend it. Check it out. You can find all the details in the show notes or description below. So, yeah, that's about it. See you later. Oh, and this Thursday I'll be reviewing the new Bond movie, so look out for that. Bye!
I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode, and thank you for listening to The Dragon's Library. Please, subscribe to this podcast to be notified of new episodes. The Dragon's Library releases new episodes Tuesday and Friday each week, and you can follow us Twitter at dragon_library2. If you want to suggest an episode topic, my email is in the description below. And as always, thank you so much for all your support.